Have we waited long enough to be on hold in time? Well, wow. Every year the audience gets bigger, I think. Word spreads outside the mouth. Anyhow, it's really nice to have an audience. If it weren't for you, this would be a rehearsal. So they have not had enough of those. They have grown weary of them, so their timing is excellent. They're ready. Are you ready?
Yeah.
No, this time. All right. Much Ado About Nothing. Now, we're going to show you four very short scenes from the whole play. That's their part. My part is to make sense out of the whole rest of the play that you don't get to see. Otherwise, the four scenes don't make any sense at all right? So, listen carefully. Much Ado About Nothing is right up there as maybe one of the best two or three of Shakespeare's comedies. It is perhaps the most performed of all of his comedies. Maybe it's a toss-up between that and Midsummer Night's Dream, but I'd say with those two, you're really looking at the two comedies that have the most audience appeal and have had for all of the years. Much Ado About Nothing was a very popular play at the time that it was written. There are recorded notes of the play having been performed. And I guess what's important is that Shakespeare called it Much Ado About Nothing, but many of the people who saw it wrote in their notes and continued to refer to the play as Beatrice and Benedict. And if you know at all about the play, you know that those two characters really are the center of the play. They represent one of the two stories of the play. So you're going to see them a little bit too. Okay, this is a comedy. We like to tell our audience that. There will be no doubt in your minds, though. There will be no doubt, I'm sure, some of the roles in front of you. He also wrote tragedies. The essential difference is that at the end of the comedies, all of the important people end up married. At the end of the tragedies, all the important people end up dead. Somebody said he got it backwards. But this is truly a comedy with a lot of good humor in it. So here we go, real quickly. There's been a war going on, and now they're coming back from the war. The victorious... that would be the first soldier anxious to return. The victorious army is coming back. We know nothing about the war except that they won. And in the opening scene, as they come back, there's a lot of celebration and congratulations and all of these things. And in the midst of it, something happens that's so common in Shakespeare. A guy over here named Claudio, a young man of great heroism and handsomeness, and a young woman over here named Hero fall in love at first sight. Now, this is Shakespeare, right? This never happens in the real world, right? Anyway, that's what happens to them. So they represent one of the two stories of love in the play. What's going to happen to Hero and Claudio? And then over here on the other side of the stage are Beatrice and Benedict, who represent the other love story in the play. And they basically don't like each other very much from something that happened before. It's never made quite clear what happened before. But they apparently had some sort of a relationship, and then it fell apart, and now they are together. And the beauty of these two characters is that they have great wit and the ability to zing each other with wonderful... offensive remarks. So what we have here are two people who everybody in the play realizes are still very much in love with each other, though they are the only two who deny it. Does that make sense? Okay. So that's what Shakespeare sets up here. Now, so we have these two stories and these interwoven characters. The people in the play, the people other than these lovers, Beatrice and Benedict, they make up their minds as a group that they are going to bring Beatrice and Benedict together again, because they think that these people are in love and are the best suited for each other, and this is matchmaking, right? Now, just so everybody understands our perception of this, people say every once in a while, what would Shakespeare be doing if he were alive today? Well, he would be writing daytime soap operas for two years. He would. If you think about his plays, especially the comedies, but even the tragedies too, they are peopled with people who have unlimited wealth and no jobs, which gives them the opportunity and the time to mess around in each other's lives. Right? And this is daytime soaps, right? That's really all they're built on, and that's what Shakespeare's comedies are built on as well. So he really understood this kind of dynamic with people getting into each other's lives. So they all set about to manipulate Benedict and Beatrice back to a love relationship. And the way that they choose to do that is to, one at a time, first they get Benedict in the garden hiding while other men talk about him. They know he's there. He isn't supposed to know that they know that he's there, but they do. So all the things that they say, of course, are meant for him to hear. And they in that conversation, they suggest that Beatrice has already expressed her love for Benedict, which she hasn't, but they want him to believe that she has. So that conversation ends with Benedict going, wow, ooh, really, this is happening to me, all by himself, right? So he resolves at that point that he will no longer be mean and nasty to her. He will, in fact, find some way to express his love. Well, soon after that, the women of the play do the same thing to Beatrice. Is that? Okay. And that's the first scene that we're going to see. Is Hero, who is the first young woman, so confusing, who else is out there? I can't remember. Hero and Ursula or Margaret?
Ursula.
All right. Hero and Ursula are going to be out here moving around this wonderful snow circle while Beatrice tries to hide from them while they talk about her and about Benedict. Again, trying to accomplish the same thing that was accomplished with Benedict, to get them both thinking that the other one is already in love with her. That's it. Are you guys ready out there? Okay. This is the first scene.
Good Margaret, run thee to the parlor. There shalt thou find my cousin Beatrice. Whisper her ear and tell her I and Ursula walk in the orchard, and our whole discourse is all of her. Say that thou overheardest us, and bid her steal into the pleached bower. Say that thou overheardest us, and there will she hide her, and to hear our whole propose. This is thy office. Fare thee well in it, and leave us alone.
I'll get her, I warn thee, presently.
Now, Ursula, when Beatrice doth come, our talk must be only of Benedict. When I do name him, let it be thy part to praise him more than ever man did merit. My talk to thee must be of how Benedict is sick in love with Beatrice.
Now begin, to look where Beatrice doth run, close to the ground to hear her comforts. Then going near her, that her ear may lose nothing of the false, sweet fate you lay before it.
No, truly, Ursula, she is too disdainful.
But are you sure that Benedict loves Beatrice so entirely?
So says the prince and my new troth lord.
And did they bid you tell her of it, madame?
They did entreat me to acquaint her of it, but I persuaded them, if they loved Benedict, to wish him wrestle with affection and never let Beatrice know of it.
Why did you so?
O God of love, I know he doth deserve as much as may be yielded to a man, but nature never framed a heart with prouder stuff than that of Beatrice. Disdain and pride bright sparkling in their eyes. She is so self-endeared.
Sure, I think so. And therefore, we're not good. She knew his love, lest she make sport at it.
Why, you speak the truth. I have never yet saw a man, how wise, how noble, young, how rarely featured. Yet she would spell him backwards if fair-faced. She would swear the gentleman should be her sister. If tall, a lance ill-headed. If low, an agate very vilely cut. If speaking, why a vane blown with all winds. If silent, why flock moved with none. So turned she every man the wrong side out.
Sure, sure. Such carping is not commendable.
No, but who would dare tell her of it? If I should speak, she would mock me into air. Therefore let Benedick, like covered fire, consume away in sighs. It were a better death than to die with mocks, which is as bad as die with tickling.
Yet tell her of it. See what she will say.
No, rather I will go to Benedick and counsel him to fight against his passions. It be, and truly I will devise some honest slanders to stain my cousin with.
Oh, do not do your cousin such a wrong, for she cannot be so much without true judgment, having so swift and excellent a wit as she is prized to have, as to refuse such a rare gentleman as Signor Benedict.
Indeed, he hath an excellent good name.
And his excellence did earn it, ere he had it.
Madame, when are you married? Why, every day. Tomorrow! Come, go in. I shall show thee some attires, and have thy counsel on which is best to furnish me with tomorrow.
She's lying. I warrant you, we have caught her.
If it be so, loving goes by hacks. Some cupids kill with arrows, some with traps.
What fires in mine ears? Can this be true? Sin I content for pride and scorn so much? Content, farewell, and may pride adieu. No glory lives behind the back of such. And Benedict, love on. I will requite thee. Tame my wild heart with thy loving hand. If thou dost love, my kindness shall incite thee. Bind our love within a holy band, for others say thou dost deserve, and I believe it better than accordingly.
Okay. All right, you got that part? Yeah. Right. So, I love it. First of all, says she's lying. A great old thing, you know, about bird lime. Kids never do. Anybody here know about bird lime? No, this was really a thing in Shakespeare's time. And this is what they just did to Beatrice, right? It was a kid's thing there. The mother would mix up this very sticky substance, like a jar of it, and they called it bird lime. I honestly don't know what was in it. But they would go out then into the woods, and on the bushes and low branches of the trees, they'd spread this stuff, right? And then they'd leave and go home, and the next day they'd come back, and there would be birds that had landed on those branches and then could not fly away because their feet were stuck, right? So the kids would come back with these cages that they had built, and they'd literally just kind of pick birds off of the branches and put them in the cages, and they'd go home and put them in individual cages, take them to the marketplace and sell them, and then people would, that's where they got birds to sing in their houses, right? So it all started with this stuff called bird lime, and that's what Ursula just said. We have lime here, madam. She has caught. All right. So here we go. So Beatrice has been convinced that Benedict is in love with her, which he really is. And in fact, you don't have to see this, but Benedict has also had this done to him, as I said, and he is convinced that Beatrice is in love with him. And at this point in the play, both of them change from being the witty, sharp-tongued, interesting people that they were, and they go into love mode. Okay? So that's what we're going to see next, all right? We're going to see Hero, a somewhat different Hero in this scene. We have a number of actors playing the same parts. Now, I was going to say warn you about, I won't use that word. In Shakespeare's theater, women were not allowed to act. So men and boys played all of the parts, including all the women's parts. We thought that it would be good for you to experience that. There being one male in the high school, he will be your hero in this scene. Now, Shakespeare's audience understood this convention of theater, and they would sit and treat it seriously. We expect the same from them. So get the giggles out right now. Hero is a young, beautiful woman of high ranking status who is getting ready to be married. Only now we get to see her and Margaret in a conversation with Beatrice, where both of them are making fun of Beatrice because they were the ones, right, who conned her in the last scene. They know what's going on. She doesn't know that they know. So that's what you have here. You will have Hero and Margaret first and Beatrice. We'll get to see what kind of mood she's in. So, are you ready for Hero?
Yes.
Be nice.
Strahd, I think your other rebuttal were better.
Nay, good maid, I'll wait none but this.
By my troth, 'tis not so good, and that weren't your cousin will say so.
My cousin art a fool, and thou art another. I'll wait none but this. God, give me strength to wear this, for my heart is exceedingly heavy.
It'll be heavier soon by the weight of a man.
Boy, upon thee, art not ashamed?
Of what, lady, of speaking honorably? Is there harm in the heavier for a husband? I think none worth the right husband and the right wife, otherwise 'twould be light and not heavy. Ask Beatrice else. Here she comes.
Oh, good morrow, Cause.
Good morrow, sweet hero.
Why, how now do you speak in a sickly tune?
I'm out of all other tune, methinks.
Collapse the light of love, that carries no burden. You sing it and I'll dance it.
'Tis almost 5 o'clock. 'Tis time you're ready. By my troth, I am sick.
For a hawk, a horse, or a husband?
What means the fool, Trow?
Nothing I, but God give everyone their heart's desire.
These gloves the Count sends me are an excellent perfume.
Stuffed, I cannot smell.
A maid and stuffed. There is a goodly catching of cold. God hath not my wit become me rarely.
It is not seen enough. You should wear it in your cap. By my troth, I'm sick.
Take you some of this distilled Cardius Benedictus and lay it on your heart. It is the only cure for such a qualm.
Oh, there, now bring it through with a thistle.
Okay, sister, so thy tongue keeps.
I don't mean any moral by this. By my troth, perchance you think that I think that you are in love, or that you will be in love, or that you can be in love. And yet, Benedict was such another, and now is he become a man. He swore he would never marry, and yet now, despite his heart, he eats his meat without grudging. And how may you be converted, I know not. But methinks you look with your eyes as other women do.
What pace is this that thy tongue keeps?
Not to false gout.
Madam, withdraw the priest, the Count, Signor Benedict, Don John, and all the gallants of the town are come to fetch you to church.
Oh, come, help to dress me, good Cause, good maid, good Ursula.
Okay. William Shakespeare understood comedy. So, fill in a couple blanks here. There's a nasty plot afoot in the play, planned and carried out by Don John and two of his henchmen, and they, because he is just the nasty guy in the play, right? He is the villain, and so it's his job to do these nasty things. And what he decides to do here, for reasons that aren't entirely clear, other than that he's a nasty guy, is to destroy the upcoming wedding between Hero and Clyde. He's going to do whatever he can to get in the way of that. And what he does is to arrange for Claudio to see from a distance Hero's window at night. And what Claudio sees there is a woman who he believes is Hero, talking to a man who he doesn't know who it is, but it's not him, right? And this is the night before their wedding. Now, this is a great breach of faith, of course. And it wasn't Hero. This was all set up by Don John and his guys. But Claudio believes that it was Hero and that she is unfaithful to him. Don John supports that idea with his comments. And the next morning, at the wedding ceremony, with all of the guests assembled and the friar there to do the ceremony, Claudio accuses Hero of being unfaithful to him even before their wedding, tosses her back to her father, and calls her no end of unpleasant things, which aren't fit for Holden. neither was the last Hero, actually. Suffered through that. All right, so the wedding just explodes in everybody's faces. And in the face of this, Hero faints. This is always a great device. And so now she's lying there, and people can talk about her and decide what to do with her. And see if you recognize this little plot device. The friar, who is there to marry them, comes up with an idea. Oh, he says, since everybody thinks she's dead, let's just go ahead and let them think that. Now, this was borrowed from Romeo and Juliet, which had been written a few years earlier. Everybody thinks Shakespeare borrowed from other people, which he did, but he really borrowed a lot from himself. And the more plays he wrote, the more he had to borrow from, and so you really kind of see this happening as he goes along. So this is what they decide to do, to kind of let Hero be dead by everybody's understanding. So they kind of haul her off to pursue that plot, and they're going to see what comes of that. And as everybody from the wedding disappears, we are left on stage with Beatrice and Benedict, who have, of course, been there for the wedding ceremony. And they, independent of each other, because of the trick that was played on each of them, they have made up their minds separately, but to come to the wedding and use that as an opportunity to declare their love to each other. That makes sense. That's their plan for what they're going to do when the wedding's going on. And maybe it will even involve them getting married along with Hero and Claudio in one of these great double weddings that Shakespeare likes so much. So both Beatrice and Benedict have come to the wedding with that in mind, that they will find an opportunity to express their love for each other. But of course the wedding falls apart. And now we have only them. They'll be in a moment. Beatrice, who actually is Hero's cousin and lifelong companion, is absolutely furious about what Claudio has done in the wedding. But, right? I mean, she is. She is just in an absolute rage. She doesn't believe it for a moment. She believes entirely in her cousin's virtue. She is, however, the only one in the play who does believe in it. Everybody else has immediately believed that Hero is guilty of the things that she's been accused of. Even her father, everybody, right? So there's Beatrice standing alone in support of her cousin. And that's what we're going to see, is the scene that happens after the wedding has exploded with Beatrice and Benedict, both of whom came to do something pleasant and now find themselves in the midst of a very unpleasant situation. But still anxious to tell each other how they feel. Benedict is going to try first to express his love to Beatrice. She's not in a receptive mood. If he lives long enough, he will learn to be a better judge of that before bringing things up. So here we go. Beatrice and Benedict, and this is good. They're going to try to be in love. All right.
Beatrice! Lady Beatrice! Beatrice, have you wept all this while?
Yay, and I'll weep a while longer.
I will not desire that.
You have no reason. I do it freely.
I do believe your fair cousin is wrong.
Oh, how much might the man deserve of me who righted her?
Is there any way to show such a friendship?
A very even way, but no such friend.
May a man do it?
It is a man's office, but not yours.
I do love nothing in the world so well as thee. Is that not strange?
As strange as something I know not. It were as possible for me to say I love nothing so well as you, but believe me not. Nor do I lie not. I confess nothing. Nor do I deny nothing. I am sorry for my cousin.
By my sorry, Beatrice, thou lovest me.
Eat a word.
I will swear by it that you love me, and make him eat it that says I love not you.
Will you not eat it?
With no sauce that can be devised to it, I protest, I love thee.
Why then, God forgive me?
For what offense, sweet Beatrice?
You have saved me in this happy hour. I was about to protest I loved you.
And do it with all thy heart.
I love you with so much in my heart that not enough to protest it.
Bid me do anything for thee.
Kill Claudio.
Ha, not for the wide world.
You kill me to deny it. Farewell.
Tarry, Beatrice.
And God know I am here. There's no love in you. Pray, let me go.
Beatrice.
In faith I will go.
We'll be friends first.
You dare easier be friends with me than fight with mine enemy.
Is Claudio thine enemy?
Is he not approved in the height of villain that has slain or scorned and disarmed my kinswoman? Oh, that I were a man. What, bear her in hand till I come to join hands, and then, with public accusation, uncover slander, unmitigate rancor? Oh, God, that I were a man. I would eat his heart in the marketplace.
Hear me, Beatrice.
Talk to a man out of open window. A proper saying. Oh, sweet hero, she is wrong, she is slandered, she is undone.
Nay, but Beatrice.
Princes and counties, surely a princely testimony, a goodly count, Count Confect. A sweet valiant, surely. Oh, that I were a man for his sake, or had any friends would be a man for my sake.
Beatrice!
Red manhood is melted to curtsies, and valor to compliment, banter into tongues, and flim ones too. And now he is valiant to Hercules, who tells only lies and swears by it. If I will not be a man with wishing, therefore I must die a woman with grieving.
Tarry, Beatrice, by this hand I love thee.
Use it for my love some other way than by swearing by it.
Think you in your soul that Claudio hath wronged hero?
Yea, as sure as I have a thought or a soul.
Enough, I'm engaged. I'll challenge Claudio, I'll kiss thy hand, and so leave thee. By this hand, Claudio shall render me a dear account. As you hear me, so think of me. Go comfort your cousin, for I must say she is dead. And so, farewell.
Okay. This is like kind of like seeing the Cliff Notes version of what you do, all right? Okay. Get to playing this. The play, as you see, is peopled by upper class nobility types trying to work out their lives. As is often the case in Shakespeare's comedies, there is another group of people in the play, and you haven't seen any of them yet. They are a group of more common folks. They are led by the constable, whose name is Dogberry, and his right-hand assistant, whose name is Burgess, who, as far as we can tell, is somewhere between 105 and 108 years old, and about this tall. Now you shrink up. And along with Dogberry and Verges, there is a sexton who, in this scene, functions rather like a court reporter. You'll see that. And then we have two watchmen, the rank-and-file police of the play, who have already told us that they do understand the job of a watch. They will be asleep very soon now. So we get a lot of police jokes in the play and all these old things that started long ago. Now, what we're going to have here is a courtroom scene. And what's happened is that it's hard to describe how incompetent the constable and his men are, all right? This is Keystone Cops. This is Three Stooges. This is Abbott and Costello. This is all of those kinds of things, right? Only this is more like the first version of them. Unbelievably incompetent people who, through the virtue of their incompetence, actually succeed. The two watchmen have arrested Don John's henchmen because they kind of think they've done something wrong, but they're not sure what. But they look a little suspicious, or aspicious, as Dogberry would say. If you know who Mrs. Malaprop was in a later time, actually Shakespeare seems to be the one who invented malapropism, and we have in this play two or three characters who are very adept at it, Dogberry especially, and you'll get a chance to see a little bit of that. So what's happened here is that Conrad and Baraccio, Don John, the evil Don John's henchmen, have been arrested, and now they have been brought to the jail for, as Dogberry and Burgess refer to it, the examination. We are here to examination these men, they say, which amounts to Dogberry asking them questions as judge and prosecutor. The watch, keeping guard over the prisoners. Burgess, the old man, standing next to Dogberry, and the sexton, ready to take notes of all of the proceedings. Okay. I don't know how else to say this. This is a whole bunch of people, and pay attention. It goes fast, and they tend to get a little loud, and that's about it. Are you guys ready back there? I got to get out of the way, because they're coming fast here. Here we are, Dogberry and his followers.
Is our whole assembly appeared?
Oh, and a stool and a cushion for the sexton. With the malefactors?
Yay, Mary, that be I and my partner.
Nay, that's certain. We have the exhibition to examine.
But which are the offenders to be examined? Let them come before the master constable.
Yay, Mary, let them come before me. You, sir. What is your name, friend?
Baraccio.
Write down Baraccio. And you, sirrah?
I'm a gentleman, and my name is Conrad.
Write down Master Gentleman Conrad. Masters, do you serve God?
Yea, sir.
We hope.
Write down that they hope they serve God. Oh, and write God first, for God defend, but God should go before such villains. It is proved already that you are little better than false names. How now do you answer for yourselves?
Mary, sir, we are none.
A wise, witty fellow, I assure you. I'll go about with him. Sir, come hither, a word in your ear. It is said that you are false knaves.
I assure you, sir, we are none.
Stand aside! For God, they are both in a tale! Have you written down that they are none?
Master Constable, you go not the way to examine. You must call forth the watch that are their accusers.
Yea, Mary, that's the eftest way. Watch, come forth. I charge you in the name of Prince John, accuse these men.
This man said, sir, that Don John the Prince's brother was a villain.
Oh, write down Prince John a villain. Oh, 'tis flat perjury to call the prince's brother a villain.
Master Constable.
Pray thee, sir, I do not like thy look. I promise thee.
What heard you him say else?
That he received 1,000 ducats from Don John for falsely accusing the Lady Hero.
Flat burglary as ever was committed!
Yea, by the mass, that it is.
Yea.
What else, Philip?
And that Count Claudio did mean, upon his words, to shame Hero in front of the entire assembly and not marry her.
Oh, villain, thou wilt be condemned to everlasting redemption for this.
What else?
That is all.
And this is more, masters. This is more, masters, than you can deny. Prince John is this morning secretly stolen away. And Hero, in this manner accused, and upon the grief of this, suddenly died. Master Constable, let these men be bound and brought me to Leonardo's. I will be forward to show him their examination.
Yea, let them be opinioned.
Let them be in the hand.
Off, coxcomb!
My God is my life! Where is the sexton? Let him write down the prince's officer at coxcomb. Bind them, thou naughty varlet.
Off, away! You
are an ass! You are an ass!
Dost thou not suspect my place? Dost thou not suspect my ears? Oh, that he were here to write me down an ass! Oh, but as you remember, I am an ass. Though it be not written down, forget not that I am an ass. No, thou villain, thou art full of piety, as we proved unto you soon enough by good witness. I am a wise fellow, and what is more, I am an officer, and what is more, I am a householder, and what is more, as pretty a piece of flesh as any in Messina. And one that hath two robes go to, and one that hath had many losses and everything handsome about him. Oh, take them away! Oh, that I had been written down an ass.
Well, that's it. Basically, what happens after that is Shakespeare works really fast and really hard to pull all these diverse things together and resolve all of the issues. And Benedict and Beatrice end up ready to be married. What is it that Benedict says to her at one point? Even on the verge of them being married, they are still kicking at each other. And Benedict says, "We are too wise to woo peaceably." So, thank you so much. Now you know. Oh, I'll tell you this. Now you know everything there is to know about Much Ado About Nothing, right? There's a really fine video that is up here of Much Ado About Nothing. It's the Kenneth Branagh video, one of the best Shakespeare movies, I think, that exists. I think the kids will watch it today, I believe, but I think that Brian is going to try to find an opportunity to show it here on an evening, and maybe you can all have a chance to see it. It's very, very entertaining. Well, I think we ought to have a parade one last time.